My name is David McMorland. I was born at Elms Farm, Lodge Road, Woodham Mortimer, and I've been here all my life. In 1941, during the war, I went to Woodham Mortimer School and walked all the way as a little boy up to Woodham Mortimer School, which is exactly a mile. We took our gas masks and our sandwiches. In 1946, I went to Morden Primary School, as my mother suggested it might give me more chance of passing the 11 plus. In 1948, I did in fact go to Morden Grammar School. And I stayed there until 1954. This was when I went on an agricultural course to Rittle Agricultural College because my parents thought that whatever I learnt on the farm, it could be improved. In 1956, I joined the army. I was conscripted into the Royal Artillery for 2 years, and I spent most of my time in Germany at Lüneburg, where the armistice was signed by Montgomery and Co. I'd been up to Denmark on NATO exercises as a matter of interest. In 1960, I decided that I'd get married to my long life girlfriend, Dinah Tyler. We got married in 1960, as I say, and we moved here after living a short spell at Heybridge Basin while we managed to sort the farmhouse, and I've been farming here ever since. In fact, until I retired. We bought Hazley Hall Farm in 1972. Farming was doing very well at that time, and I managed to get a pay a substantial deposit and also get a good long-term mortgage, which father said I would never manage. But in those days, farming went from strength to strength, and manage it I did. And we were there for 20 years, and then when I decided we've got to cut back a bit, we sold Hazley Hall, and now Andrew, my brother, and I farm together at Elms Farm. Gradually, we rented the farm to Coopers, local farmer friend. And because I had to retire, and having a stroke didn't help me at all. And the remainder, my brother Andrew, still does the farm and the grass and the workshop today, living next door in new farm buildings.
So, David, can you tell me about your farming heritage? Your parents, your grandparents, were they all involved in agriculture?
Yes, they were, Wendy. My grandfather on my mother's side, George Free, came down from Suffolk. They lived at Thaxted for a while and his father farmed there. And then he decided that he wanted to get married himself in those days and he took a job with Mr. May at Mill Beach. And it was to help him with his brewery business and to sell his special seed corn called Archer. And they both, his wife and he, lived in an old house at Mill Beach, which is still there behind the flats and the maltings. And then he had the chance after living there to buy Jacobs Farm, Heybridge, It was derelict virtually, and it was a time of depression, so I think he got it quite reasonably. And that side of the family is still there today. My father's on the Scottish side, the McMorlands. The brothers, Frank McMorland, my father's dad, came down from Ayrshire in the 1890s, and they all rented Lord Peter Farms. And Lord Peter is still there, he's still got the land, and as far as I know, the farm that we rented was called Reed's Farm Riddle, and it is still, although there's now a lot of industrial units there, it's still a very thriving farm. The acreage has dropped somewhat because some was taken when they built Riddle Agricultural College, and some has been taken for units, unfortunately.
David, can I interrupt here? That was a big move, wasn't it, from Scotland down to Essex?
They all came, all the brothers came down.
Was there a reason? That big move?
There's nothing doing in Scotland. And the farms down here, you can record this if you want to, the farms down here would become derelict because the southern farmers weren't so earnest as the Scottish farmers. And as Tom Howey at down at the other side of Haybridge will say, the Scottish farmers were prepared to put the pram in the cow shed and milk the cows while the local farmers were out playing tennis. And that's how there's a predominance of Scottish farmers in the area.
Right.
And then if you think about it, Howe's a Scottish, Macaulay's at birth Scottish, most of them are really. The farmer that had this farm, Benjamin Hillen, he came from Cornwall, and they came up because, you know, they wanted to farm, you know, in a more different way.
So it was your grandfather that took over Jacob's farm?
Jacob's farm, granddad. Very that was well, my mother's side. Yeah.
Very well known, isn't it, Jacob's Farm?
Yes.
With their farm shop. And
yes, that's right. There's still the McCreadys are there. That's my mother's youngest sister's boys are there.
Right.
And she married a man called Mr. McCready. And my mother married a man called Mr. McMorland. And that's only two generations, Wendy. And it's totally different because most of it's gone. I can remember, you know all the houses along Scraley Road, and I used to plough that up until not so long ago.
Really?
And but Simon likes his farm shop, and that goes very well. And I can remember grandfather, where they have the shop, that was the stables when grandfather had heavy horses. It was then turned into a cow shed when the heavy horses went and the tractors came. Because I remember grandfather leaning out the window because his bedroom was upstairs over the yard, and the horses used to get greasy legs after a hard day's work, and they'd keep kicking the concrete. He'd open the window because I used to go in his bed when he got up. "Shut up," he'd say. "Stand still." And that stopped Wendy.
Really?
Yes, he was. And he's a picture in my book of him leaning against the fence in front of the house. And this was like, totally different. And then the milk lorry would come in about 10 o'clock. And you'd never believe this, because transport was difficult during the war. We had the milk marketing board had a bus chassis and a lorry body put on the back, and it's still got the half cab. Remember the double decker buses had half cab?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
So as a boy, you spent a fair bit of time
there? Yes, as a child, I used to stay at Jacob's quite a bit, and especially when my mother was having my sisters. And yes, he was very good. He taught me a lot. He was my mentor right up until the day he died, really.
Mm-hmm.
He died in 1968, aged 86. Yes, he said, I'd be up here, because I took the farm over because Dad wasn't very well. And he phoned me up and he said, are you all right for hay and straw, that boy? I said, oh, yes, I'm managing. Yeah, well, bring me a load of muck down, because Jacobs needs muck. So we had Market Hill to negotiate. You know what that was like.
Mm.
No bypass.
Mm.
And how the old lorries got up there, I don't know, but they're loaded with gravel and that, because they were building big time.
But, David, you were born here, weren't you? Or not in this?
I was born next door.
Next door.
Yeah, you can see the room I was born in. Terrible.
And your early memories? Freedom? Helping on the farm?
Oh, it's all about it in my book, Wendy. It's a chapter. Yes, I started driving a tractor when I was 9. And safety people have a nightmare today. Yes, our father would milk the cows, and you say we used to collect sugar beet tops to put out on the meadow here for the cows to eat. And what I used to do is to, you say, will you put it out? And I'd put a bit of string on the steering wheel of the tractor, no cabs or anything, and tie it to the trailer. And if that started to go a bit, I'd just get hold of it and just pull it so the tractor took a different route. And then I'd jump off the trailer with the tractor still going, get out, because you used to get on the back, not on the up on a cab like you do now. How the hell we lived, I don't know. I remember changing pins in a drawbar one day and nearly chopped top off his finger.
Oh, my goodness.
And then,
But to further your education, I believe you said you went to Riddle College?
Yes, went to Riddle. Yes, that was East Anglian Institute of Agriculture, and now it's called Riddle College.
Mm. Mm.
Yes, I went there for a year. Just to brush up my agricultural knowledge, and I did a science stream rather than a mechanical stream.
Mm.
And that was very good, because we did pathology, plant nutrition, animal nutrition.
So that helped you in your later life of.
Yes, it did, and also it was a move into mixing with other people, and it was good for me because I stayed there. I wasn't allowed home, and at holidays, you know.
Yeah.
Had this old motorbike I used to sometimes come home on, and but it seemed a long way away, Wendy, then. You know, I used to ride, there was no roundabout, it was just a signpost. And no Army and Navy roundabout, you just rode straight across and down up to the end of the, past the embassy, Odin Cinema, up to Junction, up the High Street, under the bridge, out on the Roxhall Road.
So when, at what age did you leave college and come to work here full time? That would be with your dad.
Yes, that was in 1955. I went there in 1955, came out, and then I worked here until I went in the army in 1956.
Right. And the army was three years? 2 years?
2 years, yes.
2 years.
Yeah. Mm. Yes, I was. In one way, it was very good for my character. Another way, it was very hard. But there, it's good, you know, every boy should do it.
Mm. Did you miss the farm? Did you want to come back to the farm?
At first I had different sort of views about it, but because my father had not been well and the farm was in a terrible state, Mother said to me, what do? Sell up, or are we going to try and get out of it? So with the help of my grandfather, Jacobs, we managed it. I took the farm over. We bought a new tractor on HP, and I, with what I saved on grinding our cattle food with that, that paid the HP, and that's the way we went forward.
Mm-hmm.
And times got better all the time. We needed food from agriculture, and we had subsidies, which is very good. Subsidy on fertiliser, lime, 50% subsidy on drainage, and it's all what we needed, and we stepped straight into it.
Mm.
And you know, that was our salvation.
So really, you became the farmer, and your dad retired, did he?
Yes, Dad.
Because of ill health?
Yeah, Dad took a back seat because he'd had cerebral hemorrhage when he was 34, and that had hit him hard.
You must have worked very, very hard.
Yes, dear, did.
To restore the farm.
Yeah, carried 208 sacks all day. We'd unload a 30 ton of fertiliser in about an hour. But I just look back on it and think, well, I enjoyed the days.
Tell me about the milking you did in the early days.
The milking, yes, that was done. We had no electricity here until 1947, so it was paraffin lamp or generator, and the milking machines were run by a stationary engine, petrol engine, and a pump. And when electricity did come, it saved the old engine. I've still got the engine in the shed, and it had and it had to milk at a certain pressure, because the machines on the cows had to tick-tock, tick-tock. You know, you couldn't have them go tick-tock-tock. Then we milked into buckets, and then we put the milk through a filter, and it was done on a poured into a retainer at the top of a cooler, and it's put through, filtered, and into the churns. And the churns weigh 10 gallons, so therefore there's 100 weight in the churn.
And how many cows did you have?
I had about 38 to 40 cows to milk, and some were in calf, being dried off, because you had to dry them off 2 months before they calved. And the ones that were fully in milk had more food, and by drying them off you cut the food back. And so it's a 9-month pregnancy, tried to get a calf a year.
Mm.
I had a 3-month break.
Mm. And what time did you get up in the morning to do the milking?
4:30.
4:30.
Yes, I'd walk down. I used to live in a bungalow up the road when I got married. You just walk down the road in the summer. You'd see them all laying on the hill. And I'd say, come on! And they would be standing at the cow shed door waiting for me. I'd open the door and they'd go in, and all the firmer ones went first. And they all went into their stalls, and sometimes I forgot to chain them up, because you just put a chain round just to stop them walking out. And they'd just stand there, and you'd forget that you hadn't chained them up. And then when it came to turning out time, They just turned around and bucket all failed.
And you did that again in the afternoons, did
yes,
you?
Yes, again in the afternoon, yeah, 2 o'clock. Walk down the road and start milking at 3. Home at 5. Have a cup of tea, out on the land.
Right.
So, you know, we'll either go in the evening, go hoeing sugar beet, or move the electric fence, or never a dull moment, Wendy.
And that was 7 days a week?
7 days a week, yeah.
Did you ever get a break? Did you have a holiday?
We did. I said to Dad, I'm going to have to take the children on holiday. I said, can you manage? And we got a relief milker, and we were starting to cut the dairy herd back because milk wasn't paying very well. So I got a holiday, and we used to take children down to Brixham.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to get in our old Ford Prefect, which was, I don't know. We'd get up to Woodmorton Church, and the children would say, are we nearly there? And that'd take us 14 hours.
Yes.
Round the Hoddesdon Bypass.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, God, Exeter, got buckled up there. And now you just go on the M Road and boom.
That's it, that's right.
The car goes at a fair speed. Yeah, it's a challenge, are they? You've met Joanna, haven't
I
you?
I have.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, she's my firstborn.
So coming back to the farm,
yeah.
Can you tell me, obviously in the early days you had some very basic machinery,
yes,
tractors.
Yeah.
That must have changed hugely over the years.
Well, when I first came here, we were on, I think I might even better, we had steam.
Right, really?
When we first started farming, it was mainly horses. And tractors mixed, but also we had steam cultivators, and it was carried out with an engine at each end of the field and a cable, and the plough or cultivator being pulled between the two on a winding drum. That was for heavy cultivation. We started having tractors on steel wheels just before the war, and I remember the first one we had was a second-hand Fordson on iron wheels, and it was just had a, you stood up on it, and it had a 3-speed gearbox, and it would take you a week to plough 10 acres.
Oof.
Today we have these high-powered tractors and 10 acres probably an hour. That's the way agriculture's gone. The heavy horses have gone. The tractors are bigger, the fields are larger. And where we had employed 3 or 4 people on 150 acres, one doing the milking, one 2 or 3 working outside. It doesn't happen. It's not a. It doesn't happen anymore. So yes, and the there were no such things as combines. Combine harvesters came in a very ancient way just before the war. And they were imported from the States, and Ernest Owen's son used to import a combine called a Massey Harris 21, which is a very basic combine with a Wisconsin engine in, and they bring it crated up into the farmyard, build it up in the farmyard, and there was one farmer had one in this area called Mr. Binder. And some of the family is still farming at Munden. And I believe there's one still remains as a showpiece owned by the Fisher family down at Dangey.
So here, did you borrow or rent that combine harvester?
Well, what we used to do, we had a binder to cut the corn, and it, in the early days, it was a Massey Harris 5C, and we pulled it with a tractor, and it threw sheaves on the ground, which we lost a little grain from the ears, obviously. It stood in the field stooped until we had time to cart it. It was then stacked, and then when we wanted to thrash it with a steam engine, we used to put the stacks against farm drive so the engine stood on the hard, and then sack the grain off and cart it and stack it in the barn. When the combine harvesters came, they obviously did away with all that. We didn't lose seed from the sheaves getting shattered on the trailer or knocked on the ground. And it was a great step forward and so much easier. And then we used to elevate the grain, the harvested grain, put it in bins or on the floor and sell it when the price was right.
And in those days, farming was quite profitable?
It was, if you were doing it in a correct way and getting a good result from your labours, yes, it was quite good because costs were low, fertiliser was very low price. Today you pay, I think nitrogen's about £700 a tonne. We were paying £9 a tonne, and I think we had a little bit of subsidy on that.
Yeah. And presumably there were a lot more subsidies in those days?
Yes, they did, because farming needed to be encouraged. And to encourage us to expand, and if you remember, the slogan was more food from agriculture. And then we had the glut of food after that, and which is the way it goes. But that was the slogan, more fruit from British agriculture. And so that was why they made these concessions. We bought 96 acres at Hazley Hall in the early 70s, and we farmed that for 20 years. Until I had to reduce my workload. And we managed to buy it and pay the mortgage quite well, which Father was a bit worried about. He says, you'll never pay your mortgage. But we did, because things improved all the time.
So you lived at Hazley Hall for a while, for a number of years?
Yes.
You were living there?
Yeah, yeah. And Hazley Hall itself, we had half Hazley Hall, the other half was the chap next door had it. And Hazley Hall, which is a very old building, itself was lived in by a third party. I won't mention names, so I don't think it's fair. And it's still there, and it's a beautiful old house, Tudor house. And apparently it's got some quite interesting murals on a gallery upstairs. There, that when the V2 landed at the top of the bridleway, it blew the end off Hazley Hall. And I can well remember looking back after I was stood on a spoil beside a bomb hole looking at Hazley Hall, and the blast had come right across the valley, blown all the plaster off the end. And if I looked our way towards Elms Farm, it had shaken the elms up so badly it cracked the wall in the front of the house. So much so that the adjacent wall you could put your hand through and shake hands with the person in the bedroom next door. So there, dear, that's Hazley Hall. There was an old church up there, an old medieval church that stood on the site. The churchyard is still there. And when the church had to be pulled down because of dereliction, there's a new tin tabernacle, tin church, built in Haseley Village, Upper Haseley. And the churchyard is still there. In fact, I've booked my gravesite there already. And it was a Harrods package, his church. It came, I think it was about 96 quid, just before the turn of the century, last century. And it came complete with harmonium, pews, and everything else that you need. And it's, I can show the site still, Wendy. Just trench is still there where it stood.
Right, yeah.
And there were bells outside. You'd pull them on a wire. So that was that.
You mentioned, you were talking about wartime. I think you mentioned earlier that you had a prisoner of war.
Yes, on this farm working. Yeah, Walter Lapine. He came from Pomerania. And he was, all the prisoners were camped at Birch in the wood. The wood is now, when you drive to Colchester through Birch, it's all a great thick woodland. And where the camp was, it was all open, it was all chopped down, the billets were there. And there was a runway not far away. It went, went towards, I can't think of the name of the village now. Yes, and that's where they all came from. And in the mornings, you could order your prisoners to help on the farm, and a lorry would come and drop them off.
Oh, okay.
And we had land girls too.
Mm.
We had one particular land girl who was actually brilliant on a tractor.
Did they live here? Did they?
Well, the Volta often, he shouldn't have done, but he used to stay here with us at weekends to do the relief milking.
Oh.
The lorry would come at night and he'd say, okay, all aboard, and he'd jump off. And that was that. And one, these German prisoners were so industrious. The Italian prisoners were absolutely useless. They all they wanted to do was sit on the headland and sing. And in fact, I shouldn't tell you this, but Father went there one day and they got this cat roasting on a fire. Oh dear, oh dear, absolutely terrible.
Mm. But the German prisoners.
German prisoners were absolutely first class. One stayed in a village called Eric Fustel, and you couldn't stop him working. If he came and helped you at harvest time, you say, get out of the way, I'm driving the tractor, because he was masterful.
Right.
You know, and they are, if they've got a job to do, Germans will do it.
David, this farm, was it a mixed farm?
Yes, it was.
Did you have orchards?
Yes, we had poultry on the hill and a very large poultry house, which one day we had a terrific gale, like the one we had when all the oaks blew over, and it blew the chicken house over. It was a big chicken house, blew the house over, down, rolled it down the hill, and killed half the poultry and the rest flew off. That was poultry, and we used to put cockerels for Christmas. We had a mobile hen house, and we used to pull it out with the tractor onto stubbles, and the hens would go out, then they go back in the hen house at night. And the only thing was, it was foxy woxy.
Yes.
You see, and we had to make sure that was shut in, and also it was a two-legged fox as well. And one chap I remember said they tied a shotgun inside the door, so if the two-legged fox came, he gets peppered badly. And I think that did happen, and that was quite really? Bad.
Yeah.
Also, while I'm on the subject, there was a chap done for Hazy Hall. They'd been thrashing up there, and there was grain. And a chap from Purley, he was obviously needing something to, you know, grain. Went over to Hazy Hall, and he got shot by somebody. And the record of the chap that did it, I think he was hanged in Chelmsford Jail soon after.
So what fruit did you grow here on the farm? What fruit?
Well, fruit, yeah. When we came here, there was an orchard behind Bacon's Cottage, Black Cottage as you come down the road. That was a little farm in itself. And I forget what that was called. I think that was called Lowlands Farm, according to records office. And that was all fruit trees in there. That was a beautiful bit of soil. And of course all the heaters had come out. And Mr. Ratcliffe sent his tractor driver over and we pulled them all out and brought it back into standard agriculture.
Right.
And the first crop we grew was potatoes, and they were absolutely excellent crop, funny enough. But that's all we grew.
So you obviously own a lot of land round here. Is it still being farmed?
We don't own a lot, dear, not now, because we rented the land over there, which we still do. We own 140 acres here. It's sort of split. There's about 60. The wood is included. There's 11 acres of wood, and there's about 50 or 60 one side of the brook. And about the same this side.
Right.
This side is grass, or was grass, for grazing for the animals. And the other side was arable. And we found that that was beautiful agricultural land. And according to the chap that had the farm, he was a Crimean War officer called Geoffrey Grimwood Grimwood. He grew some very, very good crops of teasels, caraway, and all the other stuff, you know, mangels, and all the other old crops.
So do you have someone else coming in to farm the
Yes, land we that... used to have a contractor during the latter days for to do the combining to start with. And we bought our own, of course, because they became very, they're very expensive now, but we, you laugh at this, Wendy, the cheapest combine I bought, because I used to love machinery, used to tinker with them. I'd buy them second hand and do them up, and I paid £15 for it. And it was from John Baker at Chapman's Gorse, Danbury. I was, and on the way home, we drove on the way home. It's got a lovely six-cylinder Austin engine in. We got as far as the end of the, forget the name, Little Lane, opposite White Elms. Came out there, and the blooming thing flew on fire.
Oh, no.
And what had happened during the winter, chaff had all dropped down from the, because the engine's underneath, dropped down on the exhaust manifold. And that set fire, so father, like a twit, was there throwing stones over it, and the cooling fan was flicking them up in the air, and oh dear.
Quite an adventure.
It was, dear, and then I bought another combine. I saw one standing in a field at Cold Norton. I found out whose that was. He said, if you can get it out of the field, you can have it. So this is what they were, and then I bought a diesel combine. These are all paraffin, because everything ran on paraffin.
What sort of age, what sort of years are we talking about?
We're talking about the 65 to 75.
Right.
70s, really. And then diesel really came. Everything was paraffin, TVO, tractor vaporising oil. And then diesel came in big time in the 70s. No more paraffin tractors, all diesel. And thereby, I was talking to Alan. I said, do you remember that fuel dump at the top of Wick Hill? I said, I bet she doesn't know about that. As you came up Wick Hill, you could look right from the top of the double-decker bus. You could look down, there was all these tanks during the war, in case we, you know, ran out of fuel.
Yeah.
And that was just before we get to the fire station. And also, Wendy, on the side of Morrison's is a railway. There was a whole string of carriages on there, stood there all the war, and that was for evacuation if times got bad.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, none of them were vandalised. Amazing, isn't it? And I believe the railway track is still there, because it went from Malden East up under the bridge, which is now the bypass, isn't it? That was the old railway. Under the road, obviously, that was the tunnel. I think it still remains. And then off on the track down to Cold Norton, Woodham Ferris, Cold Norton.
So you've seen a lot of changes.
I have, Wendy,
but
yes.
But it's obviously been a really good life.
It's not a change for the better. I used to go the old main road. There used to be a little signpost at the end of the road, and the old main road's been cut off, and the one down there's just a new road. But if you look, when you get to the end of the road, there's the remains of the old road just as you get to the end. Then you turn bare round left, and Box Iron Cottage was on the corner. There was a village lock-up, which Pemberton's very kindly demolished. And then that came out through the gateway you see opposite the lay-by.
Right, I know.
It came out there. And then, of course, you swung off down round past Knowles Farm, which is opposite the roundabout. And where Morrison's is, Alan and I ploughed that not so long ago.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. And the Alan you're referring to is Alan Gentry, was it?
Gentry, yeah.
Gentry. And he was, you said, the manager of
manager of Malden Hall.
Hall Farm, yeah.
And that's an interesting house. The old Malden Hall house is very old. So if you go up, there's the Wick, which is a more modern house. Then you get to the old Malden Hall. And if you go a bit further, there's the new Malden Hall. Very interesting up there, Wendy. I believe the old moat's still there too.
So, David, looking back, it's been a good life.
Yes, it has, Wendy. I've been a very fulfilling life. I was very lucky. I married a girl that I loved, and we looked forward. She looked after me, and because I was always busy on the farm, and we had our three lovely children, Joanna, Elizabeth, and James. James now works for BFS. He's I mean, he's getting on a bit now, and
BF BFS is?
Yeah, Billericay Farm Services. Right. Joanna works them as well.
Right.
Yeah. And, yes, and Dinah, when the children got old enough, Dinah went back to work at St. Peter's. And, you know, I just carried on.
Mm. So you must be very proud of your what you achieved here over the years.
Well, in a way, Wendy, I don't look back on my achievements because I just consider that I was lucky to survive the stroke and excuse me, I'm here and got a good carer.
And you've got wonderful memories.
Yes, I'm okay. My memories are very good memories.
David, I know you've written a book about your life. Would you like to just say a little bit about that book?
Yes, I would, Wendy, because I was grateful for my memories and I thought it might be a good idea to record them because there are people that are interested in what's gone before. And it's called My Early Ancestral History and Life Farming at Woodhamwater and Hazy Aesthetics. And I had several copies and people are interested in it. I've still got a few and they're very welcome to them.
When did you write this book and what sort of motivated you to do that?
Well, because Wendy, there were times when I was out of commission for a few days. One when I had a hernia done. One when I had an accident and I couldn't do a lot. And I don't think I was saying there why, but that was why I did it. And that was about 68.
Right.
Yeah, 68, so that's nearly 30, I'm 86 now, so that's a few years ago.
Did it take you long to write it?
Well, I did it in bits, I did it on the PC, and it's still on there, and I just spoke to a girl in the village that used to do the Parish Magazine. I said, if I give you all the bits, Would you coordinate it? So I said, yes, David, we'll do that, because I know someone that does Parish Magazine that would put it all together. So what I did, I wrote the bits, put the pictures in where I wanted them, and that was how I did it. Mm. And I'm glad I did, Wendy, because I gave the children that as... Did you want that?
Oh, I'd like a copy, yes.
Yes,
you
can have that.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And yes, and the children have all had one. And, and I felt that's the least I could do, and they know something about what the miserable old devil's done.
Well, that's another great achievement in your life, isn't it? Writing this book. Interesting text and lots of pictures.
I was looking at some... pictures the other day of my little kids and that, and I got the Jack Russell puppies climbing all over me, and they were lovely days too. Used to breed Jack Russells,
right?
And what, my carer's still got one.
What a busy life!
Yes, dear.
Well, David, thank you very much indeed for letting us hear
all
your memories.
That's all right, dear.
Fantastic.
That's my
fabulous
pleasure.